It's alive.
This line from the 1931 science fiction movie Frankenstein often rings through my mind as I contemplate and study coffee quality. As the seed of a fruit, there is so much that pertains to quality centered around the understanding that this seed is alive. On today's episode, we're going to dive into these life-sustaining activities as it helps us to understand past crop coffees. Well, it's been a busy season. As travel restrictions have lifted, we find ourselves here at the center, hosting courses and enjoying being in person again. I know that not everyone across the world is experiencing this, but can I just say how much of a delight it's been to be back, learning together in person. Please check out our website for updates on course times, as well as resources, online courses, and more available at thecenter.coffee. When you hear the word past crop coffee, what does this mean to you? For some, the sensory descriptors of woody, papery, flat, baggy come to mind. For others, it might be the anxiety and stress of balancing out your annual green coffee offerings throughout the year. Yet for others, past crop coffee represents the coffee from the previous harvest sitting in a warehouse waiting for a buyer. While the coffees representing these understandings could be one and the same, we are learning that the sensorial descriptor of past crop coffees are more nuanced than we might have thought. In other words, the quality deterioration that occurs over time is contingent on many factors. But where do these flavors come from? How are they developed? And what should this mean for roasters, producers, and all those in between? How should we as an industry view past crop coffees? And are all past crop coffees created equally? As an instructor for coffee sensory courses, one topic we regularly discuss during the courses I teach is this concept of past crop coffee. We discuss how this is not a defect in green coffee, but rather due to the nature of coffee as a living seed, it will degrade over time. This creates quality issues and will cause a general decline in sensory attributes over time. Furthermore, in coffee post-harvest processing courses, we discuss how to mitigate and control this decline of quality. But as we discuss more in depth, I want to make sure we have clarity into the terminology we are using and clear up some of the inconsistencies. In most parts of the world, coffee is harvested once per year. There is an exception to this in some producing countries, but for the most part, one harvest per year. Therefore, it is common when coffee producers sell their coffees to be asked if the coffee being offered is from the current crop. This essentially indicates to the buyer that it is from the most recent harvest. And while past crop coffee can definitely be bought and sold at the producing country level, in general, producers want to sell all of their crop as it is harvested. On the consuming side of the industry, though, this becomes a bit more complicated. On the one hand, you have the term past crop coffees, which very much can refer to coffees from the previous harvest. Now, this becomes a bit complicated when you have coffees available in warehouses in consuming countries being sold at the same time that those producing regions are just beginning the new harvest. Are these coffees technically past crop if newer or fresher harvests aren't even available yet? This is why sometimes you hear the term current crop being used as well. To take this even further, you have the term past crop that is often used as a sensory descriptor but comes with no indication of time since harvest. So this term can be applied to that coffee that has been in storage for 18 months, or it can also be used to describe a coffee that's been in storage for 3 months and due to certain impacts of processing, drying, storage, etc., are already exhibiting past crop sensory characteristics. So what gives? How are we to understand this quality decline and what influences those processes? As the seed of a fruit, we must remember that coffee's overarching goal is sustaining life. That delicious morning cup of coffee is a fantastic byproduct, but as a living organism that respirates and performs a host of other biochemical activities, the seeds we think of as coffee center around sustaining and prolonging life. The amazing part of this process is that those compounds and activities essential to sustaining life are the very things that contribute to the quality we have the pleasure of enjoying. During the growth and maturation of coffee, a wide range of compounds are deposited into the seed that serve as essential reserves for the soon-to-be-growing embryo. These compounds come from byproducts of photosynthesis, nutrition of the soil, impacts of pests or diseases, speed of ripening, and so much more. In addition to all of this, the seed also maintains a certain level of what we call desiccation tolerance. Now, without going into too much biology here, desiccation tolerance essentially is the ability of an organism, in this case a coffee seed, to withstand the loss of moisture without losing viability. When you think about those tomato seeds you bought to grow in your garden, they were quite dry, yet still maintained germination viability. The activity surrounding desiccation tolerance allows for seeds to enter a dry state without losing viability, and this is of utmost importance for the coffee seed as it seeks to sustain its life. The main characteristic that coffee needs to maintain a high degree of desiccation tolerance include prevention of oxidative damage, avoidance of structural damage to cell walls, and stabilization of cellular membranes. For a coffee seed, maximum desiccation tolerance is reached as the coffee enters late maturation. Again, another reason why harvesting fully ripe coffee fruit as a strategy to produce high-quality coffee is key. But this is all referencing what happens before the fruit is even harvested. Once the coffee fruit is harvested, there is an entirely new set of circumstances impacting the resulting quality. The first one is pulping. The mesocarp layer, also known as the mucilage, serves many purposes, and one of these is to suppress germination. However, when we pulp the coffee and see some of this layer removed, germination will begin. Now, that doesn't mean the embryo shoots forth from the seed, but what it does mean is the mobilization of reserve compounds. Throughout the remaining steps of post-harvest processing, the activity of germination influences resulting quality. Furthermore, variations in processing will also impact these activities differently. Dr. Jonathan Pazmino Arteaga, a researcher from Colombia, points to how these germination activities continue until the coffee moisture content falls below 10%. Therefore, pulping, fermentation, washing, drying, and storage all play a role in influencing germination activities and thus a seed's level of desiccation tolerance. By reducing the desiccation tolerance, we reduce the viability of that seed and potential for impact on long-term storage. In other words, development of past crop sensory characteristics. The condition of the coffee seed upon reaching its dried state is influenced by things like the degree of mechanical damage, adsorption of moisture, oxygen deprivation, speed, or perhaps better said, temperature of drying, and more. All of these contribute to variations in how quickly coffees began to present a deterioration of quality. Drying is a tricky point as well. Dr. Barame, who I've talked about often before on this podcast, has clearly shown that drying parchment coffee at bean temperatures of 40 degrees Celsius maintains membranes and ensures reserve oil compounds are not exposed to oxygen, which causes lipid oxidation. During the drying process, in order to maintain membrane integrity, water is replaced with compounds like glucose that preserve the cellular structure. if this is not given time to occur appropriately, i.e. if the coffee dries at too high a temperature, those structures are compromised, leading to faster oxidation activity. And thus, those pesky past crop characteristics develop. In addition to drying temperature, a number of other factors come into play, like the processing method, initial quality of the coffee, storage conditions, and more specifically, temperature and relative humidity, as well as storage material, all play a contributing factor to the intensity and speed of chemical changes, such as oxidation, that cause a decline in coffee quality. Dr. Dirk Selmar, a professor of plant biology in Germany, points to the role of the parchment layer in preserving seed viability. His research showed how hulling coffee seeds significantly reduces seed viability, and to quote, "coffee beans that are stored within the parchment remain viable far longer than hulled beans, and that this maintenance of viability apparently has a positive effect on the preservation of green coffee quality during prolonged storage," end quote. The mechanical stress caused by hulling speeds the loss of seed viability and ultimately the off flavors represented by the term past crop. So, this shows how the longer we can maintain coffee in its pre-hulled state, the longer we preserve its quality. Now, seeing as most of the dry mills across the world are located outside of consuming countries, with the exception of those producing countries with robust consumption cultures, there is limited control one has on this. However, it is something to consider that contributes to the longevity of maintaining quality. But what are the flavors so often described as past crop, and what do they come from? Dr. Baraim, and just for the record, there's no coincidence that his research focuses on drying and past crop characteristics, as they do have a direct connection. But Dr. Baraim worked to identify the aromatic volatiles responsible for aging notes in coffee. His research discovered that aldehydes and acetaldehydes formed from lipid oxidation are the source of these unpleasant aromas. Specifically, acetaldehyde trans-2-nonanol is a compound formed during oxidation that is responsible for the cardboard or wood-like flavor present in old coffee. It happens with beer as well. But what's even more intriguing has to do with Dr. Baraim's research working to identify early indicators of aging characteristics in coffee before they present sensorially in the cup. The idea here is that if one was to know the coffee would soon begin tasting a certain way, then it would allow for better stock management and maximizing of value. But more on that in another episode. Storage conditions and packaging type also influence seed viability and thus quality as well. During storage, Dr. Baraim explains, coffee beans breathe, consuming oxygen, carbohydrates, fats, and proteins, producing CO2, water, and heat. The intensity of respiration will depend on storage conditions and time. Changes that deprecate coffee occur more intensely in environments with high temperature and high relative humidity, and in coffee beans packed in permeable packaging. End quote. We can actually track the amount of CO2 production inside a coffee package to better understand the respiration activity of the coffee seed. For example, if the CO2 content inside the package maintains at a higher than atmospheric level, it is understood this reduces the respiration rate of the coffee seed, thus maintaining quality for longer periods of time. If you just paused this episode and Googled how to measure CO2 inside packaging, I like where your mind is going. So all of this is great and interesting, but what does this mean for the initial conversation we started about the term past crop? You see, my contention is that as an industry, we have become accustomed to writing off prior harvest coffee as past crop and decided it has inferior quality. Based on the research, this does not really compute. To begin, let's start at the tree. If we consider that those coffees with higher amount of reserve compounds would possess higher potential for desiccation tolerance and thus maintain higher quality for longer, then would we be able to equate low density and high density coffees the same? I want to note here that I specifically use density and not elevation as an indicator. Too often, we throw around high elevation as if it is always directly correlated to high density. And while this might be true a good amount of time, we must remember that elevation is connected to latitude, the distance from the equator. Therefore, it is more accurate and better to compare density as this directly correlates to the amount of quote-unquote stuff inside the seed. If we understand that the reserve compounds are contributing to maintaining cell walls and ensuring the viability of the seeds, then we would expect lower density coffees to age or present past crop characteristics faster than higher density. Now, I do want to add a caveat here. I'm not saying that low density coffees are bad. I know producers who are working in low elevation regions producing exquisite coffees, but they face challenges with this very principle and so must do extra work either on the cultivation side or post-harvest processing side to ensure higher quality. Furthermore, if we consider that drying temperature, again, not speed of drying, but drying temperatures, directly relates to membrane integrity, then we cannot hold equally a high-temperature dried coffee and a low-temperature, high-quality focused dried coffee. Again, it is important to stipulate drying based on temperature because of the use of mechanical drying. Too often in our industry, the elevation of solar drying over an extended period of time is considered to produce higher quality than those dried mechanically. I contend this is mainly because of how mechanical dryers have been historically used, and not that mechanical drying in principle is relegated to a lower threshold of quality potential. Admittedly, it is not viable for every producer across the world to dry mechanically. I get that. But solar drying and mechanical drying are subject to the same standard, temperature. Lower temperatures are essential to maintaining quality. If you're interested to learn more about this, I talked about this fact more in episode 7, because also, airspeed is another important factor. But go check out episode 7 if you want to hear more. The final consideration we must remember when considering quality deterioration is storage. Not merely the environmental conditions, like temperature and humidity, but packaging type as well. Within the specialty industry, it has become quite standard to use hermetically sealed packaging for maintaining quality. There is some fascinating research also looking at biopolymers being applied to green coffee to maintain quality longer, and I look forward to sharing more about this with you in a future episode. So what does this mean for the industry? This information hopefully calls into question the stigma or myth that is so often held against coffee from a prior harvest. As we all well know, not all coffee is grown, processed, dried, and stored equally. I hope we can break down this stigma and begin to explore how high-density, low-temperature dried, well-stored coffees can hold their quality much longer than those that don't and should be rewarded for the excellence in cultivation and post-harvest processing and not written off merely because their harvest date extends too far in the past. Likewise, coffees that would be processed under a different standard might begin presenting with sensory impact in the cup sooner. My hope is that producers who are crafting coffees at a high quality level are being rewarded for the extra work that goes into seeing these coffees maintained for longer. As a roaster, this supports you as you navigate your annual offerings and ensure a top-notch product continues to be put in front of your customers. What's your experience with this? How have you seen coffees age differently? Do you find certain processing protocols support or encourage this? Do you find yourself surprised that some coffees 12 months after harvest still taste amazing, while others 3 months after harvest are already declining in quality? I would love to hear from you and hear your experiences with this issue. That's all for today. Thank you for listening to this episode, and I hope you have a fantastic day wherever you are. I'm Tim from the Center, and remember, keep learning.